Once Vill Council decides what work he will be given...
We know that.
Doc muttered something that sounded like lickspittle, but nobody took any notice. Lori was sitting on one of the beds, sulkily picking at rough skin around her heels. Christy pulled the innkeeper toward the window.
Do other ships sail where the Salvation goes?
Aye, mistress. That they do. But they keep away from the waters where Pyrrha plows the furrow. No man wishes to rock that boat, thank you very much.
But could a good captain track down where she'd gone?
Pyrrha always goes to the Great Banks. Everyone knows that. There's a ship out there now from this vill. The Bartleby. Captain Delano at the helm.
I saw men on that ship there.
She pointed to the second set of masts along the quay. Rodriguez squinted where she pointed.
My seeing's dim at such a distance. The one with the white jack flying at her masthead?
No, the red flag next to it.
Red?
Yes.
Your fingers are creasing my good satin shirt. It cost a great deal of...
The ship, Rodriguez. Its name.
It be the Phoenix. Named so as it was built from the burned shells of three other vessels. In the cold years after the time of the darkening skies. Aye, the Phoenix. Captain Will Deacon.
I saw men busy about her. She a whaling ship like the Salvation?
She is. She sails on the first tide tomorrow. It be around 3 in the morning. But why do you ask?
Just idle curiosity, Rodriguez, that's all. Nothing else. And thanks for the food.
The landlord of the Rising Flukes left the room, looking slightly puzzled. After 2 more days at sea, the crew, including both involuntary members, had settled down into a regular regime. Each man was part of a watch that served 8 hours on duty, then 8 hours off, their duties rolling on day and night. The only occasion when this would change would be in the event of one of the lookouts spotting the telltale signs of a whale, broaching in a grinburst of frothing white spray and foam. But so far, there had been no such sighting. Pyrrha Quad kept to her cabin, occasionally pacing the quarterdeck, stick beating out a discontented tattoo on the scrubbed and holy-stoned planks. Ryan was surprised how he and Donphil had been so easily accepted. The whisper talents of the Indian with the harpoon had ensured he would be welcome. A good ironsman meant more dead whales and less risk to lives. And Ryan's going unarmed into the forecastle after Kenny Hill had brought him a similar measure of respect. The food continued to be terrible, but the weather stayed fine. Bright blue skies and the cleanest air Ryan had ever breathed, free of the bitter chem taint that still lay across so much of the Deathlands, marring its old beauty. Though some of the seamen hated being mast-headed at lookout for its boredom, Ryan loved it and would volunteer to the first mate when it wasn't his turn to scramble aloft. Og gave him clues to watch for.
The Leviathan is not like any other creature, Outlander Corder. He has a cunning beyond our knowledge. I have read old books in what was once the library of the Vill, telling of the whales and sharks and their ways, of a great white that frightened a town, and of its hunting, of how the whales can call to one another across 100 miles of Teeman Ocean, of their mating and of their killing. I have studied them.
And you hunt them to their deaths?
Oh, their chilling is my living. Through me and the other ships of Claggartville, the town survives. There is food, heat, and light, and goods to trade. If the whales deserted these waters, then the Vill would die. Sure as Raddeath lives in hot spots.
He told Ryan to watch for seabirds. Where they gathered, there was often a whale close by. The gulls would circle about, knowing that shoals of smaller fishes would be disturbed by the monsters and driven close to the surface.
A whale that's dived deep, down to the belly of the Black Canyons, will come to the surface carrying the taint of wet earth and mud. In a fog or at night thou canst taste it on the air, and thou wilt hear the cries. Deep as a cathedral bell, my granddad used to tell me. And the noise of a whale as he leaps clear is something thou never loses from the memory. Keep all this in mind, Outlander, and thou wilt not come amiss on it. And call down fit to rend thy bellows if thou seest anything of the whale. That is what we are all here for, Ryan Corder.
As he clung to the cold metal ring that rimmed the top of the barrel, Ryan swayed easily to and fro, going with the budding motion of the ship. Seeing the spreading wake that the ship trailed, and the V of foam that peeled open under her stern. The sea was empty. No circling, screeching gulls, no dash of spray to mark the rolling gray-green pastures. High above the deck, It was a world of stillness, with only the sighing wind for company. The wind and a man's thoughts. Ryan pondered on his talk the previous evening with Donphil. The shaman had been in better spirits than almost any time since Ryan had first met him. He'd tapped the dry biscuit on the chipped table, ignoring the small curling weevils that came tumbling from it. His eyes were bright, and he leaned forward to speak quietly to Ryan.
It is a good day, my brother. Ysun, giver of all life, speaks to me out on these waters. I have never, even in my vision, seen such a teeming emptiness. I cannot wait to hunt my brother, the whale, to meet with him out in those small boxes of wood and sport with the long spears. It will be such a good time. I have prayed to White Painted Woman that my heart shall not fail and that my hand shall be true in the fire of the hunting.
Ryan listened, concentrating on forcing down another spoonful of some of the most disgusting soy stew he'd ever eaten. In among the rancid lumps were gobbets of stone-cold grease. But one of the first things a child learns in the Deathlands is to eat anything and everything put in front of it. Who knew where the next meal might come from, or when? Donphil carried on with his enthusiastic monologue about the delights of the whaler's life.
I know that the woman's a blood-eyed gaudy slut, but she hasn't threatened either of us. If she does, we can stand close and do what we can. If we live through to the end of this sailing, then we can chill her, and all will be well.
Ryan had asked his friend what his plans might be if they did survive. The Apache had turned his mind inward and not replied for some time. Finally, he nodded.
Yes, I have a debt to you, Ryan, which can never be settled. There in the deserts, I was barely half a man. Now, here, with the wind through my hair and the taste of cold and clean in my mouth and nose, here I am a whole man. Here I am a living man.
Ryan, alone at the masthead, knew in his heart that the Apache's time with them was running out. It didn't matter how the dice lay, but if they should live through it, he felt that Donphil would choose to stay in Claggartville. But first, they had to live through this. Because of his destroyed left eye, Ryan could gain little benefit from binoculars. But the captain had rummaged in a sea chest in her cabin and emerged with a long brass-bound telescope, which he'd given to Ryan, warning him what might happen if he were to lose his grip and let it fall.
Better you fall, Cully.
And Piriquad's smile sent the short hairs prickling at Ryan's nape. Now he used the telescope to scan the area around the ship, watching for any sign of the presence of their prey. From the way the crew had been talking, he knew they were closing in on the grounds where they would normally encounter the great leviathans of the ocean. But there was nothing. Breathing in time with the slow pendulum swing of the mainmast, Ryan again allowed his thoughts to wander. He thought of the large house in the blue muffled shens where he'd been raised. His years on the run, alone, friendless, until he fell in with the legendary trader. Fighting, running, loving, chilling. That had been the story of those days, those years. Ryan remembered the evenings around campfires, with a smell of wood smoke and meat roasting on the embers. Companions who traveled together and fought for one another.